You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hey, what's going on? Welcome to Built for the Stage podcast. This is Joe Roscoe, founder of Built for the Stage, Broadway's number one fitness platform. If you haven't tried a free trial, go to the website, builtforthestage.com, and love to chat with you. Special thanks to BPN, Broadway Podcast Network. Okay, let's get on to our special guest today. As always, an exciting episode. This guest recently just opened up Funny Girl, the Broadway revival, where they're playing the character Eddie Ryan. You've seen our guest on Broadway a few times now. Extremely athletic, extremely gifted tap dancer. One of my favorite, if not my favorite, forms of dance. So I'm super excited to welcome to Built the Stage podcast, Jared Grimes. Hey, Jared.
How you doing? How you doing?
I'm doing very well. Happy Tuesday to you.
Happy Tuesday to you as well. Tap Tuesday. You know, we'll call it a Tap Tuesday.
Tap Tuesday. I love it. Okay, wait. Let's get into Tap Tuesday here. Tap dancing. When did you get into it? Who was a major influence in your life? How did you become a master at tap dancing?
Oh, man. I started tap dancing when I was three. The first human being I saw tap dancing was my mom. So, I used to come downstairs and she used to like be working on routines in the kitchen with her friends and stuff like that. And tap was actually her worst discipline. Like she was more of a concert dancer, you know, modern jazz theater. So I used to always see her, you know, working diligently on tap. And so, you know, anything I saw my mom do, I wanted to do, you know, the same thing. So I got her to give me a pair of shoes. Basically, she got me a pair of shoes because I was just all over the place. So, you know, she was trying to focus my energy into, you know, something that could, you know, potentially pay off. So, you know, I was running around doing everything, every activity under the sun that you could think of that a little kid could get his hands into. That's what I was doing. And tap was one of the things I could get my feet into. I started off with her being my first teacher, and then I just bounced around from teacher to teacher to teacher. And then it stuck. I started seeing movies of like the Nicholas Brothers and Fred Astaire and Sammy Davis Jr. And Gregory Hines at an early age too. And, I was just like, man, like, you know, I didn't really understand as a child that like grownups, you know, outside of my mom, you know what I mean? We're tap dancers or we're doing this, you know, at that age. And frankly, you know, I only saw my mom doing it. So when I started to see, you know, older male figures in movies and who were like superstars doing it, you know, like, you know, Gene Kelly, Bill Robinson with Shirley Temple, like I was just like, oh my goodness, like this is actually a thing. It's not just something fun that you do in the kitchen with your mom, you know, every Saturday morning. So, I kind of stuck with it and I studied those guys, you know, in those old black and white films. And, you know, at a certain point, it just kind of showed the art form, the craft kind of chose me. And, at that point I was just like, all right, cool. Well, I have a responsibility to make sure people remember these guys and these gals from the past, such, you know, Jenny Ligon, to name a few, from the past that kind of paved the way for, you know, me to kind of get on stage as like, you know, Funny Girl at the August Wilson Theater and yeah, just kind of do all the things that I love and that I saw those guys doing and I saw my mom doing when I was a little kid.
Was it self-realization at some point when you were growing up that like, oh, I'm really good at this? Or was it your mom or someone else that maybe pulled you aside and said, hey, like you're gifted in this. Like if you really apply yourself, you could be something great. When did that transition happen for you? Yeah, you kept doing it for fun, but when was it not just about having fun, but you realizing, oh, I can make a life of this?
What's funny is early on, like every dance class that I was in, I was always the only boy. So I think at first I become accustomed to hearing the fact that I was good just because I was the only, you know, boy in dance class. And, I moved to North Carolina when I was six from Jamaica, Queens, New York. And I started doing these dance competitions. I'm talking about, like, you know, in the mid to late 90s, you know, dance competitions were like a big thing, the Midwest and the South. And you had all these companies that were touring and, you know, hosting these big events, where, you know, if you made it through, you could win money and you can win trophies and stuff like that. So I think that, you know, when I turned 9, I actually started doing those. And, you know, my very first couple competitions, you know, I was making it all the way through to the end, and I was winning with tap dance. I used to do jazz, I used to do theater, I used to do, you know, lyrical dance, like everything you could think of, but my tap dance routines were the ones that were winning a lot. And, you know, I think at that point, like probably around like 9 years old, I was like, all right, cool. Like, you know, I got the hang of this, you know, I don't think I would be, you know, winning these competitions if I wasn't, you know, okay. at the craft of tap dance. And, you know, every competition that I won or that I did well at, I just, you know, I was just like, all right, cool. Let's take that energy to the next one. And let's take that energy to the next one. And what I started to realize is that, wow, like, yeah, I'm pretty obsessed with getting better, with evolving at an early age, because whatever I would do at the last event or competition, I would want to one up that. Like, I didn't want to do the same thing. I didn't want to feel the same way that I felt about the last win. I got into that, like, competing with myself thing. And at an early age, the competition or the platform that I was performing on became irrelevant to, you know, me striving for greatness or perfection in the craft. And I think that's when, you know, I always liken it to like a mad scientist. Like, I make any platform my lab, and I go in there and I put all these potions together and see if I can kind of come up with just absurdness when it comes to, you know, the craft of, you know, the arts or in tap dance. And if I can, like, surprise myself, if I can wow myself, then, you know, once I open my eyes or I pick my head up, you know, out of all the things that I'm trying to create, and if people are, you know, are happy with that, then I'm good. But, you know, I kind of put, you know, my standards and the bar that I set for myself first early on, and I would try to exceed that every time. And that's when I kind of figured out, okay, well, I think if I'm in that kind of headspace when other 9-year-olds are pretty much just thinking my mom forced me to do this competition, like, you know what I'm saying? I was like, I think I have something here with, you know, with tap, and I can really officially call it, you know, a passion of mine. And I feel like I'm pretty good, you know, if I'm in that headspace. So, like, around 9 years old, I feel like I kind of started to take off with it confidently.
Yeah. As a business owner that's constantly marketing or advertising service, whatever, when I'm putting together this material, I say to myself, what you said is, like, when you wow yourself, or when you say, oh, that's good, you know, you're on to something. And if you don't feel that way, then you have to, like, self-reflect and say, well, if I don't care, then why would they care? Why should they care? And I think that's great as artists to kind of have that reflection of, like, if I'm not moved by this personally myself, then why should I expect anyone else to be? So that's really cool you brought that up.
Exactly. Thank you, man. I appreciate it.
So again, you just opened up Funny Girl. Tell us about it. Tell us about opening. Tell us about just the process. What are some of your favorite moments of it? Just congrats again. Amazing.
Thank you so much, man. Well, yeah, Funny Girl is, it's one of everybody's favorite musicals of all time, due to the popular Broadway show 58 years ago with Barbara Streisand, and then the movie, with Barbara, and we have a different take on it with Beanie Feldstein at the helm, leading us courageously, comedically, and just, you know, she's a savant when it just comes to being on stage and being a megastar. So I didn't even know she was on the show when I got. Well, no, I think I found out a little bit before that, but when I was auditioning for the show, there was no lead, and everybody knows that when it comes to, you know, Funny Girl, it's significantly about that lead, and then all the dominoes kind of fall in place. So it was just an audition like that. You know, my one of my first mentors, Ayodele Cassell, was the choreographer, so that was one of the main reasons why I stepped into the room. You know, I saw that I was to be auditioning for the role of Eddie Ryan, which historically was not an African-American character. And I was like, oh man, well, here's a chance to add a different perspective, to open people's minds a little bit, to what a black choreographer in the early 1900s who has this best friend relationship with a young Jewish girl in the early 1900s, like, you know, what that would be like. And, I love, as I was saying before with the last question, I love pushing the boundaries. I love, breaking the rules. I love defying the odds. I love running right at the obstacles as opposed to avoiding them. And this seemed like a pretty cool challenge to get people to forget and to believe in a new take on the show. And in particular, my character, Eddie Ryan. And I think in the very first preview, when I stepped out on stage, I think it really hit me. I was like, wow, this is the first time we're introducing, the world to, a black Eddie Ryan. You know what I mean? And I was just like, for a little bit, it was like overwhelming. Then all of a sudden it was just like, let's get it. Like, it's showtime. You know what I mean? Like, it was super fun. And, opening night was amazing. Cause all of our friends and family and loved ones were there, to see that new take on the show. And to see everybody have such a good time with it and just to be laughing hysterically, at all the jokes and, really enjoying, the dance and the singing in the show. I really felt like, and I still feel like that we're really doing something really good for theater and the entertainment industry after 2 years of, all being at home. I think we all are seeking opportunities to laugh and to relate and to release and to just let go and just have a great evening or just a great couple of hours if we can, afford ourselves that. Because over the past 2 years, we were all on computers or on phones, or we were all wondering what was going to happen. So, Funny Girls is one of those escapes that just allows everyone to just positively laugh their butts off, for a couple of hours. And, it's a show that everybody can relate to. Everybody has a inner Fanny Bryce in them. Everybody has a inner Eddie Ryan in them. An inner Nick Arnstein, an inner Rosie Bryce, like all the characters really, really tap into a certain aspect of who we all are. And I think that when you can kind of show people the ups and the downs and the light sides of that and the dark sides of that, all the good and the bad that comes with how we relate to all those characters, and then we can all just laugh about it at the end of the day collectively, and we've made a connection that, the arts really can do like no other thing in this world.
Yeah.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on Essie Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
I want to rewind and zoom in on something you had said. I have on my board here, I was listening to an autobiography, and it's Andre Agassi, the tennis player, his autobiography. And he talks about dreams being tiring or tiresome, that they come with a price, they come with a price. And you mentioned that maybe just instinctively that you lean into adversity, or you lean into like challenging and defying the odds. Is it just natural, or how do you approach that? How do you get yourself to that headspace? I think our listeners could really just benefit from hearing someone of your caliber, how you approach leaning into the difficult times.
Well, it's it's, I don't know where I got it. I mean, I know my mom is super competitive and my dad is super competitive. So my mom was super competitive with the arts and my dad was super competitive with sports and athletics and stuff like that. And, you know, I kind of combined those two, but, you know, I kind of took it to a whole different level in our household, because I feel like, you know, once again, at an early age, when I saw my mom, you know, tap dancing, like one of the earliest things I can remember is like, before I even had a pair of shoes, I was already competing with her. Like I already wanted to add something to the steps that she was doing. I already wanted to teach her something about what I thought about the step. And it wasn't an ego thing. It was just a, oh no, I have an idea. And the same thing with my dad, you know, as soon as I, you know, I got into athletics and stuff like that, you know, as soon as I learned how to hit a ball, I was already trying to learn how to hit a home run, you know, when I just learned how to hit a ball, I was already trying to knock it out the park. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't enough to just hit it back, you know, to my dad or just to connect with the ball. I think, you know, early on that kind of let me know that whatever is presented to me in the moment, I'm already trying to figure out what people think it's not supposed to be. that's just how I'm built, man. I just like, it's just like, if the dead end is right there, it's like, in the path to the easy way or the obvious path is this way, I'm going towards a dead end. I'm trying to figure out how to make that not a dead end. I'm trying to make you figure out how even a dead end can be, you know, the light at the end of the tunnel. You know what I mean? It's why, like, somebody, it's to this point, like, I took the SAT, right? I didn't know any of the answers on the SAT, but I was the last one to finish. So my mom was like, how did you not know any of the answers, but she was the last one to finish? I was like, you know, I was sitting there and I was staring at those questions, like, there's just so many different ways to answer these questions. Like, you know what I mean? I couldn't figure out, or I couldn't comprehend, like, obviously I know what the answer is, but why couldn't it be, you know, B, C, D, or E? Like who's to say that, I mean, I'm to the point where I'm like, who's to say 2 + 2 really is 4? Like, what does that really mean? You know what I mean? I'm like, that's how maniacal I am about, like, you know, feeling like I could actually fly or like I could actually, you know, barrel through a brick wall. Like, I feel like there's always a way if you truly believe, that it can be done. And like I said, at an early age, I kind of had that itch. And then I just put that forth towards any task that I had that day. So whether it was gymnastics or whether it was basketball or whether it was theater, or whether it was voice lessons, acting lessons, whether it was tap class, hip hop class, ballet class, jazz class, you know what I mean? Science club. Like, I was always the kid that, like, was in the back of class. I wasn't in the front. I was always the kid in the back of class listening to everybody, you know, put forth their answers or what they thought. And I was decoding that and trying to figure out where my answer was within all of that, as opposed to answering exactly what the teacher had put on the board. So like a sponge, I just kind of soak up everything around me and I try to find an instinctive answer, as opposed to the answer that's on paper, or as opposed to the answer that the teacher is telling me that is the answer, just because she's been taught to tell me that that is the answer. That's never been enough for me. I mean, that's just what it is. And then it becomes addictive. And then you step out of your door every single day, you know, looking for, you know, someone or something to challenge you. And you can't rest at night unless you've conquered, you know, what people think is unconquerable. Wow. It's impossible.
Yeah. You're awesome. This is everyone listening, the past 2 to 3 minutes of what Jared just said is like the definition of how greatness is achieved. You know, you can't do the 99% and expect to be the 1%. You have to be the 1%. You have to do what you're saying, which is amazing. And you live, and from what you're saying, you live it 24/7. You live the quote, you don't have to get ready if you stay ready.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's exactly.
Seems and like, at the end of the day, ready might not even be ready for you. You know what I'm saying? Like, we can take it that far. It's just like, you know, and I tell people all the time, I use the word infinite a lot,
Okay.
And people are always like, you know, how do you do this, or why do you think that? And you know, I throw the word infinite around, and you know, I tell people, I was like, I'm not afraid of anything. Like, and there's like the idea of saying you're not afraid of something to prove something. But, you know, then there's the idea of saying you're not afraid of anything. Like, you will really just jump and you'll figure it out on the way up or down, you know, and I'm not saying literally like to go to, you know, somewhere and then just jump. But like,
yeah,
you know, whatever the challenge is, whatever the opportunity is, I'll step forward. And I'll put what I have in my preparation and my recognition of my blessings and my gifts and, you know, how hard I work. I'll put that on the line any day up against anything. Even if I don't know it, like we could be fencing. I've never fenced before in my life, but I'll step first out and be like, look, I'm a take what I know and I'm gonna figure it out in the moment. I'm not gonna go down easy. I know that. I know that much. Like, I'm gonna figure it out. And I've never fenced before in my life. I never even thought I would even talk about that, but that's just the first thing that popped up in my mind. Yeah. It's like, hey, look, you know what I mean? Whatever it is, I'm about to go toe to toe with it. And, you know, I'll learn something from that. And, you know, I was talking to my dresser the other day, and, you know, we talk a lot about, you know, perfection and, you know, what people perceive to be a win or a loss. And just casually, I was like, I don't think I've ever lost anything in my entire life. And she was like, wait a minute. And, you know, and I talk about playing, you know, like hooping, you know, on the weekends and stuff like that. And obviously you lose games. I mean, that's a part of it. But I'm one of those people to be like, yeah, I know we lost, but I got this win within the game. I got this win within the game. And I got this win within the game. And that's why the next five games we won, because from that loss, I recognized what was a win within that. Like I gained something from that, you know, that L. So I was like, was it really an L, or was it an L to you just because you had more points than us that game? You know what I mean? Like, it's like I needed that one in order to beat you the next five games in a row. Like I needed that one. So it's just like, is it really a loss? Is it really wrong? You know what I mean? Or have you really failed in life, or have you just succeeded in a different way?
Yeah. You either win or you learn.
Yeah. Facts. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You're a coach, Jared. Are you a coach and not telling us what's going on here?
Man, I just, you know what I mean? I lead by faith, man. That's kind of like, you know, my mantra. And I, you know, there's the idea of a shark that, you know, a shark always has to keep a forward moving motion in order to breathe. A shark is one of the only animals in the wild that has to continually move forward in order to pump oxygen through its gills. Can't swim backwards. And if it's standing still, it's not pumping oxygen through its gills. So I always tell people, yo, steady moving forward like a shark. Steady moving forward like a shark, or everything stops. You're not moving forward if you're not gaining ground. If you're not seeking something, if you're not reaching for something, then you're not breathing.
That might be like my new favorite mantra that you just gave me. I love that. I had no idea.
Yeah, man. And a shark looks like one of the most vicious, you know, things on the planet too. So it's just like, it just adds more fuel to that. Like, you know,
I have a friend, he is obsessed with like shark mentality, shark season, da 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 da. But I've never heard him talk about the oxygen thing. I wonder if he knows. He'll be obsessed with this. I'll have to tell him.
It's why they're mythical. They're just, you know, and I'm not even like a shark. I love all animals. I'm not like a shark buff, but like I'm so fascinated with that particular animal for that. And it's kind of been one of my, you know, one of the things that I constantly always remember in the back of my mind. It's just like if I ever feel like anything in life, you know, people around me or things around me or even myself is moving backwards, then I actually feel like I can't, you know, that I'm not breathing correctly or I'm not operating correctly. So I always try to stay, you know, steady moving like a shark.
All right. So staying off of the stage, more after hours talk. Are you watching the NBA playoffs right now? You got any favorite teams, any favorite players?
Well, my favorite player is LeBron James, and you know we didn't have a great year this year over there in Lakerland.
No.
But I'm kind of excited for the new generation of the younger athletes coming forward. So I'm a big fan of, you know, Luka Doncic, Ja Morant, Jason Tatum, and Jaylen Brown over there with the Boston Celtics. I'm really rooting for, I've never rooted for Boston for anything, but I love this team with Ime Udoka over there. Yeah. And they had a big win yesterday. And a lot of athletes like Ja Morant, I think you just saw, I'm sorry to cut you off, but a lot of athletes, like, I gravitate towards them because of their dance-esque, their elegant-esque style of play. And usually, you know, even like Michael Jordan, usually those players are the most dominant ones in the game, the ones that are like Baryshnikov or like Gregory Hines or like Sammy Davis Jr. or like Fred Astaire. Those are the ones that are the most fun to watch. So, you know, sports and basketball, that basketball in particular is my favorite because it's, you know what I mean? It's the most dance-esque one, in my opinion.
Yeah, Ja is not a basketball player. He is a performer.
Exactly. He's an artist.
Yes. It is. What he does is insane. It's great. It's another level.
Yeah, man. Super bendy, man. Super bendy. And he can, like, yeah, he can fly. Like, he can legit fly. He can legit fly.
Yes. Someone was saying, an analyst was saying, Ja jumps, and after he jumps is when he decides what he's going to do. You know, he has that ability to, like, levitate up there and then just create while he's in the air.
It's will too. It's will. It's crazy because his will is out of this world too. So you can imagine, you know, somebody having just the will to accomplish something in the moment, and then they do supernatural things like that.
Yeah.
That's where the supernatural comes from.
When he attacks the rim, he's very similar to Russell Westbrook.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
They're just tenacious. They are, like, no fear, like you're saying earlier, just get out of the way.
Yeah, they're superheroes, man. They're superheroes. Like I said, it's just that's why I love that, you know, I keep saying the word dance-esque, but I love that. That type of athlete that has the elegance and the grace to, you know, be able to jump in the air and figure things out. Kind of like what I was saying in one of those previous conversations, questions that we were going through. It's like the ability to just jump and to let your faith and your will and your, you know, your confidence in yourself, you know, figure it out for you. The minute you start to think, then that's when you remove yourself from, you know, supernatural, or you remove yourself from the zone, or you remove yourself from allowing magical things to happen. I mean, the brain is important, but in my opinion, it should operate last when you're an artist. Russell Westbrook, Ja Morant, like, you see them, man, they're operating on spirituality and faith and preparation and readiness and, you know, pigheadedness and stubbornness and, you know, all the many things, the many colors, the many layers that make us who we are, that ironically, you know, make us, you know, or give us our flaws. Like, all those many things that are perceived as flaws a lot of times, you know, are your greatest gifts, and in the moment can really make you jump over somebody or fly or walk on water.
We need to get this episode to Russell because he needs to hear this again after his struggles this season. We need to say, hey, Russ, go back to those young years and just let it rip, baby. Just let it rip, you know?
Yeah, man. You know, and it's, chemistry is a big thing too. Like, you know, you're what you have around you also has a lot to do with how you tick. And, you know, I think this year, just the collection of parts, front office and stuff like that, it might have just been a down year for them. And, you know, sometimes you have to have that happen in order for, you know, you to figure that out. Because even a lot of the teams that are thriving now, they had, like, a lot of down years. And they had to kind of figure things out. And once they put the pieces together in the right way, now they have, you know, younger, thriving, you know, oh my goodness, just leaders in the game. I mean, a lot of those guys, they're like 22, 23, and 24 years old. So, like, the superstar has gotten younger, because people have figured out how to build and take that hit for a couple of years and then build around somebody who has the mentality of what we've been talking about in this entire podcast. They build around them when they are scratching the surface of it. So that way, by the time they really, like, it clicks for them, then all of a sudden all the parts around them are right and they just win. Yeah. They just win. They don't get in their own way. Yeah. The machine works for itself and they can thrive and, you know, we're talking about them as opposed to talking about, you know, the stars of yesterday, like, you know, the LeBrons and the Kevin Durants and the Kyrie Irvins. Even the Stephen Curry is like, now they're, the new generation is starting to come in and, you know, do things differently. And it's just like, it's amazing to see. So, yeah, you know, it might be good to kind of let the older statesmen kind of take a back seat this year and, you know, allow Ja and the young generation to take off.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, Jared, I appreciate you giving us the time. The episode was amazing. There are a handful of episodes that with my clients, I will say, hey, give this a listen. Like, this is going to be transformative for you. And this is one of those episodes. So I really appreciate your thoughts, your time, your insight. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, man. Super pleasure, man. Hope to do it again sometime.
Yeah, that'd be great. We'll be, I'll be coming up to see the show late May of this month.
Oh, for sure. It's a good time. It's a good time. Oh, yeah, my goodness. Definitely a good time.
I can't wait. All right, everyone. Thanks for listening to Built for the Stage podcast. That was Jared Grimes, currently in the cast of Funny Girl. If you want to check out Jared's Instagram, you can find that in the description of this episode. I'm Joe Roscoe. Athletes are actors. Actors are athletes, so start training like one. Later.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com, and of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.